Welcome to Brownwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers across Canada's community radio station. This episode of Brownwire was produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on unceded Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory, as well as CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. In this episode...
And we were here just recently over Wapakika when young people died so needlessly.
We're this perfect nation. That's how everybody portrays us. That's how everybody sees us. And we've got all this evil in our country and nobody knows about it.
The territorial acknowledgement, it's great that it's being said in classes, but it should also have some sort of meaning behind it. The fact that it's important that we do acknowledge that this is unceded territory, that's just an example.
First up, here are headlines. The following headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY in Sinik's traditional territory in BC. In August, Groundwire reported on a BC Supreme Court ruling that the BC Minister of Environment, George Heyman, must reconsider a 2014 decision halting development on the Jumbo Glacier Resort, a proposed all-year ski and recreation resort in the Purcell Mountain Range proposed by Glacier Resorts Limited. On September 13th, BC Communications official David Carn, speaking on behalf of the Ministry of Environment and Climate Change Strategy, announced that the province will appeal the August court decision. Local environmental groups WildSight and the Jumbo Creek Conservation Society argue that the resort will adversely affect local ecological values. The Jumbo Pass is an area of core sustenance for grizzly bears in the region, home to ecologically significant wolverine, mountain goat, and West Slope cutthroat trout populations, and an important transit area for the critically endangered mountain caribou. Sinik's elder Marilyn James opposes the project because it will adversely affect ecological values in the area the Sinik's call Pick's Mickum or White Grizzly Bear. Robert Duncan, executive director of WildSight, stated that the August judgment was shocking and that WildSight was pleased that the province will be appealing it. Our next headline comes from Michael Welch of community station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabegakin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of Nishiwak and the Nakota.
A young man from British Columbia is on a walk across Canada to raise awareness for the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, boys and men of Canada. Matthew Jefferson's father was from New Zealand and his mother, an Indigenous woman, was from Morristown, British Columbia. He began his walk on June 1st in Victoria and arrived in Winnipeg in September. He plans to continue walking on to St. John's, Newfoundland. In an interview with CKUW, Matthew explained that he was inspired to begin his walk following the disappearance of a relative.
Frances Brown, my aunt, October 14th, 2017, had gone missing just outside of Smithers. It's been almost 1 year now with still no leads of where she might be. You know, we're this perfect nation. That's how everybody portrays us. That's how everybody sees us. And we've got all this evil in our country, and nobody knows about it. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to go east, but I'm going to walk there. And I'm going to tell everybody I meet about my family, about our pain. And I want to meet other Indigenous communities and hear their stories, hear their pain, hear their names, and carry those with me across Canada.
Matthew Jefferson has a fundraising page, www.gofundme.com/thewalktoremember.
That's it for our headlines. We'll be right back after this.
You, I have my breath.
You just heard I Held My Breath by Ray Spoon off of their 2018 release, Bodies of Water. Now on to our features. On the evening of Tuesday, September 18, Winnipeggers packed a 200-person capacity theater classroom at the University of Winnipeg to hear incumbent Mayor Brian Bowman and six other candidates take part in the first mayoral debate of the election campaign, this one dealing with the city's environmental needs. Dubbed a mayoral fast pitch form, a number of environmentally themed groups in the city sponsored the event, including Green Action Center, Climate Change Connection, Bike Winnipeg, the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition, CCPA Manitoba, and the University of Winnipeg Sustainability Office. Members of the CKUW News Collective were on hand to record audience reactions and probe the kind of environmental policies they thought should be addressed in the election.
So I'm Sarah Campbell, and I work for the University of Winnipeg Campus Sustainability Office. And so as the University of Winnipeg Sustainability Office, we were hoping to engage students and the whole community of Winnipeg in our new election that will be happening on October 24th. And there was main topics of discussion were curbside compost, urban design and development, transportation, the contamination of Lake Winnipeg, which is a huge problem that we also help research here at the University of Winnipeg. And so it was really about bringing together the community and different organizations throughout Winnipeg to kind of learn to come together and what we could accomplish together. And I really feel like this event was a great success, and I really hope that we get to do more with our organizations here in Winnipeg.
I think we should be asking all our elected leaders at all levels to take climate change seriously as a national crisis, something we need to deal with now. We need to start dealing with it now with a plan to have serious greenhouse gas reductions in 10 years, not 50. This is not a party issue. It is an issue of survival.
I'm Dave Nickars. To reduce the natural gas use in this province, you need to insulate our buildings. We need a massive jobs program to put insulation in the empty walls that we have all over this town, and you will immediately reduce the natural gas use. Secondly, use Manitoba Hydro and use the carbon tax for this kind of thing. We have a carbon budget that we're blowing, and we can't blow the carbon budget. We all rely on that for living. So carbon budget, insulation, and affordable housing.
I'm Peter Miller. I used to teach here, and I work with the Green Action Center as a volunteer. The climate one is a big one. The city has an action plan, as the mayor pointed out, to be passed by council on Thursday. I think the biggest challenge is whether the budgets will match the plan. I think in the past that hasn't been the case. The bus fares keep going up, but there's not a penny charge for using the roadways as far as the city goes. I mean, there are provincial and federal taxes, but the city has no way of getting money from drivers, and that has to change.
I think my biggest disappointment was that four of the candidates, who some of the most prominent ones, said they would not prioritize other means of getting around the city over private motor vehicles. I couldn't believe it. And so that puts us in a situation sometimes of when you go to the poll, decide who's the least bad. No, but fairly, there were good suggestions as well.
I'm one of the organizers, Lynn Fernandez with the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, one of the organizers of this event, and of course, the organization that put together the alternative municipal budget. I was very disappointed to see the complete lack of how people are planning to put their very ill-defined, vague plans into action, and how that might be costed out and budgeted. There was no mention of the infrastructure deficit that we have, the $6.7 billion infrastructure deficit that we have, and how that's dealing with that in a comprehensive way would actually allow them to deal with a lot of the environmental problems that we have. And some sort of a plan that would raise money through borrowing, for example, on the capital budget, that would allow them to deal with the infrastructure budget in a way that would also allow them to attack some of these major environmental issues, like how to fund maybe greening the transit system, how to fund the wastewater treatment upgrades, those sorts of big ticket items that really have to be gotten at through the capital budget. And there was absolutely no mention even of the fact that we've got a capital budget, let alone an operating budget. So it was, as Anne said, there was just no level of literacy or deep knowledge of the issues.
That story was provided by members of the CKUW 95.9 FM News Collective. Also from CKUW comes this feature from Michael Welch addressing the crisis of suicide among Indigenous peoples across the country.
September is World Suicide Prevention Month, an occasion for community members from charitable organizations, clinicians, politicians, and policymakers to individuals with lived experience of suicide attempts and loss to share understandings and highlight prevention strategies. The familiar messaging, however, is likely not going to mention suicides of Indigenous peoples as being an end product of a capitalism and colonialism. This is the theme of a 2014 book written by Roland Christjohn and co-authored by Shaughnessy McKay, Dying to Please You, Indigenous Suicide in Contemporary Canada, reveals Indigenous suicide to be not merely a result of individual deficiencies and shortcomings, but a response to social and cultural forces outside that have assaulted them in a very real sense. Statistics on Indigenous suicides are not up to date, but according to figures dating back to 2000, the overall First Nations suicide rate was roughly double the Canadian average, and the suicide rate for youth between 15 and 24 was 5 to 7 times that of non-Indigenous youth. Christjohn is Oneida of the Haudenosaunee, a professor of Native Studies at St. Thomas University and a founder of the American Indian Movement in Canada. In a 2014 talk, Christjohn mentioned that he had lost a friend and fellow AIM founder decades ago and became disillusioned with standard psychological and individualistic approaches to addressing suicide in Indigenous peoples. He insists that Indigenous suicide is a direct consequence of a project of repression and assimilation.
What you have is there are social forces in societies in general that work against you wanting to commit suicide. But when those social forces break down, when people feel enemy, detached, aloof, unconnected, then they commit suicide. You see, Indian societies broke down. Our customs, our languages, our political structures, they fell apart. And because we are normless people, we suffer from anomy and we commit anomic suicide.
In an article published for Ricochet Media, Greg McDougall quotes from the book stating, quote, "Indigenous peoples in Canada are systematically misinformed about the nature of the forces arrayed against us as individual human beings. Does the mass of Indians who commit suicide understand that this is murder? Do they understand that their murder is being carried out by people under the facade of healing them?" Unquote. In the same Ricochet article, Shaughnessy McKay draws a parallel between the suicide crisis and the genocidal violence of the residential schools, noting that it took an outraged public to galvanize action. In Ottawa, a member of Parliament, Charlie Angus, is introducing a private member's motion called the National Suicide Prevention Action Plan, M174. Here's Angus from a press conference on the motion from May of this year.
Crisis after crisis in so many communities, in Lalash, in Attawapiskat. And we were here just recently over Wapakika when young people died so needlessly. So what we're saying is we need a national action plan because children and young people and seniors across this country continue to die.
Perhaps most encouragingly, grassroots action is being taken in the form of an online multimedia platform called We Matter. This is an Indigenous-led nonprofit organization committed to Indigenous youth empowerment, hope, and life promotion by communicating to youth that they matter and by providing resources and support for them as they cope with crisis.
People from across the country submit short videos, 1 to 2 to 3 minutes long, speaking right to camera, right to Indigenous youth who may be struggling or feeling alone, sharing their own stories and words of support.
There's messages from NHL hockey players.
You're not alone.
Musicians.
Never doubt yourself.
Politicians.
You matter to your community.
For details about the We Matter campaign, please visit the site wemattercampaign.org. In related news, the CBC Massey Lectures will feature Tanya Talaga, author of Seven Fallen Feathers about youth deaths in Thunder Bay. Listen for those lectures on the CBC radio program Ideas in late autumn. From Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis and the traditional territory of the Nihiyawak and the Nakota, this is CKOW's Michael Welch for Groundwire, with files from Greg McDougall of equitableeducation.ca.
Our next feature comes from CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on unceded Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory. The First People's House of McGill invited the community to share in the celebrations of their 17th annual powwow on Friday, September 21st. CKUT's Mads Bjørn Lundsgaard spoke to the attendees about the importance of Indigenous cultural preservation at an institution like McGill University.
I'm standing here with Dana, who is the coordinator of today's powwow. And Dana, could you just tell our listeners, what is a powwow?
A powwow is a gathering. It could be one day, 2 day event. Not all nations have a powwow. Ganawage has a gathering of nations. We have a powwow here on McGill campus.
So I'm sitting here with Emeril, and Emeril, could you tell us about how being at a powwow feels as an Indigenous student?
Well, being at a powwow for the first time in I don't know how many years is pretty awesome. I think it's great that McGill is holding a powwow, and that means it's more accessible to a lot of non-Indigenous students and other peoples in Montreal. I think it's really good for representation. And it also makes me feel a little bit more at home.
How do you think McGill and Concordia, like major universities, are doing in terms of acknowledging and respecting Indigenous tradition?
I think they're trying, but they can do better. The territorial acknowledgement, it's great that it's being said in classes, but it should also have some sort of meaning behind it. The fact that it's important that we do acknowledge that this is unceded territory, that's just an example. I think there could always be more support and more resources for Indigenous students at universities.
All right, so I'm sitting here with Denzel Sutherland Wilson, an Indigenous student of McGill, studying anthropology. And you are a user of the First People's House, Denzel.
Yes.
How does it work?
First People's House, well, it's like a resource on campus where it's like a good gathering place of Indigenous students, right? So I know that I can always go there and find some of my peers there, and that there's like food, and if I need help to access any sort of resources on campus, I can ask the people there, and they're generally pretty helpful. I don't know, it's just like a good place to hang out and a good, you could say like a safe space on campus for Indigenous students, if you want to use that term or whatever. But yeah, it's just like a place that we like, that's for us, you know, specifically. So it's good. And there's like lots of good social events and stuff and different cultural events that happen there. Like I'm part of a drum group at First People's House, and they organize stuff like the powwow here today. So.
Yeah.
I never went to powwow. Like, we don't have powwows where I'm from. It's like the more, like, not part of my nation's ceremonies or practices. So it's like a cool place to learn about the nations that are here and like learn from them and also share different stuff from where I'm from. And also just to, yeah, meet a lot of other native people. And it's also a good place for us right now. Like, we're promoting like our club a little bit and raising some funds for it, the Indigenous Student Alliance. So
what kind of club is that?
So it's like it's a student group. So on campus, like, we're completely like run by students, like created by students. And we basically, our goal is just like whatever way we can to create a better community for Indigenous students on campus. And like, we do that through a variety of ways. But I think the important part is that it's like student run. It's not like a service provided by the school. So we can set whatever direction we want.
How did it make you feel coming to the powwow today?
It feels good to be in like an Indigenous sort of environment. Or McGill, that's another thing, is that like McGill is like, it's not like a place that feels natural or like inviting, or like that was like designed in a way for me or for Indigenous people. So being at the powwow is like a space that's distinctly Indigenous is really cool. And especially it brings together lots of Indigenous people from all around and outside the McGill community, so you get to meet lots of other cool people. And it's interesting to see other people interacting with like a powwow for the first time too and learning about it. So maybe definitely makes me feel good, you know. And even things like getting to eat like moose stew, like that's not something you can find at a restaurant really in Montreal.
Thanks again to Mads Bjørn Lindsgaard for that feature. That's it for our features. Now it's time for a community radio report, courtesy of Michael Welch of radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The community radio sector in Canada has long recognized the importance of redressing the legacy of genocide affecting the First Nations. Moving forward, going beyond apologies, going beyond even land acknowledgement, involves investing in righting the relationships between the peoples who share the land. Indeed, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action acknowledges the special role of media in this process. What follows is just two of many initiatives in the community radio sector attempting to make progress in this area. A feminist radio program on community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg has made great strides in this direction when it started the monthly feature Skirting the Issue. Skirting the Issue provides a special space for the voices of Indigenous women on aspects of contemporary culture. The show typically illuminates perspectives that are missed even by nominally progressive individuals and has become one of the leaders at CKUW in the drive to further indigeneity. The segment and the title evolved out of a controversy from June of 2015 when a University of Winnipeg professor objected to the request that women attending a pipe ceremony on campus wear traditional attire, namely long skirts, as a show of respect. The professor considered the requirement discriminatory against women. Kona Saber, formerly Kona Cochran from Peguis First Nation, explains more.
You'll have other feminists discuss this as well too, that wearing the skirt is a patriarchal adaptation, but it's not, because it is representing that skirt of that teepee and that home and the love that women offer and the nurturing that women have to offer. And so that was what the protocol is. And so we ended up talking about it with Jen Unwin on the Femisphere, and we called it Skirting the Issue because it really was about racism. It wasn't about the fact that sexist practice of women wearing skirts was being forced upon the school. That wasn't the case at all. She was, the article that she wrote was skirting the issue about racism and her veiled racism. I guess that first episode we had was just to address the professor's letter and the false assumptions that were made about about Indigenous women and the patriarchy that might have existed. And so now it just expands onwards because, and it was kind of timely because at the same time that the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women's Inquiry was finally given some voice, and there's just a myriad of things that occur within Indigenous communities, and the topics are huge. And the issues that we have in our society, you know, arise from a lot of the misunderstandings from one another, or also lack of understanding so much as even compassion for why Indigenous people in Canada are at the bottom of the social scale. And so this helps to give people an understanding of where that disparity exists and why it exists and how can we address it so that it's not being thrown in our face all the time, and that we can try and be, you know, good Canadian citizens along with the Indigenous population that was here already.
Listeners can hear Skirting the Issue and its current host, Dawn Lavand, on the last Thursday of the month at 8 a.m. local time on 95.9 on the FM band. Meanwhile, on the west coast of Canada, Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO, started airing a biweekly broadcast, Indigenous News. These one-hour programs are archived at cooperadio.org and air Wednesdays and Fridays from 7 to 8 a.m. local time. Gunarji O'Sullivan, a longtime programmer with Co-op Radio, hosts the program. Here is her breakdown of the initiative as explained on a recent Co-op Radio broadcast.
We've gotten a lot of good feedback from listeners saying that they really enjoy the morning show. It has a different feel. By the end of the show, we're all in tune with each other in a good way because we start the show off with the morning prayer with Gabriel George. And it's the Salish anthem. And then we hear from Derek White, Sky Cloud from the Métis Matters show, and also Sarvanez from When Spirit Whispers. And then I bring you any breaking news or also yesterday news. And we also have an interview segment where people are invited to sign up, have an interview with me about anything. From cooking to filmmaking to politics, fish farms, Kinder Morgan pipelines, being adopted. And then we end the show with events. And I really invite you to tune in.
Thanks to former radio host Kona Saber and current host Gunarji O'Sullivan for their cooperation in putting together this report. From Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
That was our community radio report. We'll be right back after this.
It's getting close and I can feel it. The sky is orange and my throat is burning. Where is the line between saving what we have?
That was It's Getting Close from Ray Spoon's 2018 release, Bodies of Water. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in collaboration with CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Music this week was by Ray Spoon. Headlines were written by Catherine Fisher and Michael Welch. We also thank Greg McDougall of EquitableEducation.ca, as well as Mads Bjorn Lindsgaard for their contributions. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.